All right. So, why don't each of you tell me about your family background and how you got involved in this tradition?
You want to go first, Margaret?
Oh, sure. Well, I come from an Italian American family and from New York. And my mother moved to this country when she was 16. She was born here and then lived overseas with her parents, my grandparents, and then moved back when she was 16. And so, like most immigrants, my mother was very eager to become American. And so she did all kinds of things, was very entrepreneurial while raising eight children. She later became an RN and an intrepid farmer and fibers artist. I grew up primarily on Long Island and spent a lot of time in Manhattan with family, going to the world's best museums and really having an incredible introduction to the arts and contemporary art and all kinds of media, including some of my favorite things like tapestries and the unicorn tapestries, and going to museums like the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Museum of Natural History. Anyway, fast forward, I grew up with dairy goats. My mother started a small dairy goat business, and we had a small crew of goats and then horses. And I really learned the farming way of life from my parents. And even though my dad was an engineer and my mother being an RN, we had a small dairy goat farm in rural upstate New York. And I left to go to college, and I spent 20 years in Phoenix and 5 years in Los Angeles, and really continued to work in craft arts with my mother and my two sisters. My mother had a she continued her interest in farming and switched to sheep when she wanted to knit a sweater. Our family story, which is a true thing, is that my mom wanted to learn how to knit a sweater, so she bought a flock of sheep. She went all in on everything. It was go big or go home with my mother. Really, truly fearless. And so she was no longer making goat's milk cheese. She was making wool. And I continued working alongside her and never really learning how to do these things on my own, raising sheep and knitting and spinning and all of that. My mother was an original member of the Troy Waterfront Farmers Market in upstate New York, which is right next to Albany, the state capital. And my mother and my sisters, Elizabeth and Beth, and my sister Jessica, at one point, really were the vendors for Capranduce Hills. That's my mom's farm name. And I was kind of an auxiliary while living in Arizona, an auxiliary member. I would bring wool and roving and yarn back with me across the country, and I needle felted and crocheted and knitted and sent stuff back and brought stuff back to for them to sell at the market. So while having a full career in arts administration, I did these other things. And the funny thing is, my life and my work and my trajectory came to a very clear meaning for me when I moved to West Virginia. You see, I had been a public art administrator for some 25 years in Los Angeles County and Scottsdale, Arizona, where I, cultivated the careers of artists and did community-based work and large-scale monumental work. We worked with artists and architects and a lot of, community-based work. And as you might know, public art is really about telling the story of a people and where they've been and where they think they are now and who they want to be, And so I came here and realized West Virginia is very much still in the making. and I had this incredible opportunity to meet Kathy and her husband Reed at Evans Knob Farm through the Woofing program, which is an international program for people who want to learn about working on organic farms. So it's a volunteer opportunity for learning. And in exchange, you get some room and board and you work for farmers. And how I came to that is my husband, David, and I left Los Angeles about 5 years ago to change our lives. We wanted to do something different. So we traveled the country in our teardrop trailer. And we saw all kinds of places all around the country. We stayed mostly in primitive areas. But as we got further east, it was harder and harder to find primitive areas. So we were staying in state parks and national parks and campgrounds, and we worked on farms, and we showed up at Evans Knob Farm. And Kathy, what was it? I think maybe August or October 2017.
It was closer to October because you helped with the garlic planting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And anyway, so I saw in Kathy someone who reminds me of my mother. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop here in case you have further questions and want to hear from Kathy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very cool story. I was curious how the sheep to shawl, the concept came about, but it sounds like something you inherited.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yes.
Kathy, why don't you tell me about your family background and how you got involved in raising sheep and fiber arts?
Well, I grew up on my grandparents' dairy farm in the county. My mother passed away when I was 7 months old, and eventually my dad and I moved back in with his mom and stepdad, and just grew up on that farm. They always had a garden, and they had, of course, dairy cows, and we raised probably, I would say, 90% of our food. It was a very rare thing to go into the grocery store, so I learned a lot of things about gardening and preserving food and all that kinds of stuff from my grandparents. My grandmother was an avid needle person. She loved making quilts, and she crocheted and was constantly making those really beautiful lace doilies, and she would make dishcloths and just all kinds of things. So she instilled the love of that type of an art in me. My husband and I, we got married in 1978 and moved immediately onto his family farm that's been in the Evans family. We're the fourth generation to farm it. And so we had our family. He worked at IBM, and I was pretty much a stay-at-home mom, continued to garden, continued to crochet and try to learn to knit, but I was having issues. I just couldn't quite make the two needles work together. It was a mess all the time. But the kids grew up to the point where they wanted to join 4-H, and their cousins showed sheep at the Fayette County, Pennsylvania livestock fair and show. And they really wanted to do sheep. So we got our first sheep probably in 92 or 93, something like that. Mm-hmm. And when they were old enough to show in our own county fair, we were at the Buckwheat Festival 1 year. And we met a lady, Kelly Smith, that she was raising Romney sheep at the time. And she was the barn chairman, and she had brought some of her Romney sheep to show in the purebred show. And our middle daughter, Becky, came up missing one day, and we were looking everywhere for this child and could not find her. And finally, Kelly yelled across the barn, "Hey, I found her." Becky had crawled into a pen of Kelly with her sheep named Susie Q, and the two of them were curled up together asleep in that pen. So Susie Q came home with us, And that was the beginning of our wool adventure. Kelly, she had an extra spinning wheel that she showed me the basics and said, here, take it home and play with it and figure it out. And a lot of the stuff has been self-taught from there to here. Mm-hmm. I've gone to all kinds of fiber shows in Asheville, North Carolina, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, at Rhinebeck, New York, the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, out to Worcester, Ohio, mm-hmm. just all over the place. And when you go to things like that, you pick up little tidbits, and a lot of the vendors are willing to walk you through how this new toy, I call them toys, how they work. And sometimes they'll even let you try them out, you know, at the show, and you can figure out if this is something that you want to add to your collection or not. So that's pretty much how I got into it. It wasn't like handed down through the family history, because my side of the family never had sheep, mm-hmm. but Reed's side did. He and his mother had a flock of Suffolk sheep, which are a meat breed. So he knew the basics on how to take care of the sheep and their requirements and all that kind of stuff, but he didn't know what to do with the wool. So he bought me my own spinning wheel for Christmas one year, and then the next year he bought me a knitting machine, and now I've got a fiber studio full of all kinds of things to use, from looms to carders and pickers, knitting machines. I've got two spinning wheels in here now, and it some days you can barely walk through it like today. I'm kind of glad we aren't doing video, because video is a disaster area.
And so then did you pick up weaving?
Yes, I actually took a weaving class at the MAC in Morgantown, Morgantown mm-hmm. Art Center, years ago, and loved it, but didn't have the money to buy a loom at the time. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, a very dear friend of mine, she was a rug weaver, and she had a loom that she needed to sell because of some health issues that she was going through, and she just needed to stop weaving. So I got her loom. She taught me how to weave a rug. And again, it was one of those things. This is the basics on how it works. And she helped me thread the loom for the first time, and we loaded it into my truck and brought it home. So, yeah. So literally I fly by the seat of my pants. When I want to learn something, I just sit down and figure it out, or go to YouTube or ask questions at a fiber show or something.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you explain the scope of the sheep to shawl apprenticeship? And everyone who I tell about this is just totally fascinated. It's a very cool concept.
Well, I want Margaret to feel comfortable and feel like she can handle whatever situation comes up when it comes to raising her sheep. And she knows that I'm available day or night by phone call or text message, however she needs to get a hold of me if she's having an issue with her sheep. We've walked through a couple of really rough spots, haven't we, Margaret?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once we were very successful, and the other time we lost. But that too goes with learning from sheep to shawl, that not everything is going to be a success. There will be failures, but you get up, dust yourself off, you learn from it, and you go on. So I want her to have the knowledge and the power to go to raise her sheep, to be able to prepare the wool, and have a finished product that she's not only proud of, but something that she can turn around and sell to help make a living off of her farm. And I think that's where her heart's at, is she wants to do right by the sheep, but she also wants to be able to bring a little income in.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that is a really great summary. I might just add that in retrospect, this is actually a lifelong apprenticeship.
Yeah.
This does not happen in 1 year because sheep to shawls, as we call it here, is very seasonal, mm-hmm. and there are cycles involved. So there are certain things that happen at certain times of year, and they may or may not happen this year. Right. So I really could see learning for a long, long time, mm-hmm. especially as I get into the nuances of not just raising the sheep and troubleshooting that, but the other half of this, which is processing the fiber and producing. It's mm-hmm. so rich with possibility that, you know, zooming in on what's most applicable here is part of the challenge.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What makes sense with this particular wool is not what makes sense with a different kind of wool.
Mm-hmm. tell me what your sessions have been like so far.
Oh gosh, the first one, we just we met at Margaret's place and we walked through her area where she keeps her sheep, and she was telling me about how she rotated them and feeding practices and, you know, just the husbandry part of it. Mm-hmm. We went through that. And what was the next one, Margaret?
I came to you and we sheared some sheep.
Oh yeah, we did.
And I can't remember if before or after that was lambing.
It's kind of all run together.
Yeah, I know. Lambing was over the phone. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at my notes. And then after that, I came up and we did some weaving. So with the shearing, we skirted wool and got it into the wash. And then most recently, we were weaving and dressing a loom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There have been multiple phone calls and text messages in between all of that too. Because of COVID, because of COVID and because of the distance between the two of us, we're like 2.5 hours apart. Mm-hmm. So because of all that, sometimes a text message or a phone call are, you know, our best way to connect and work through some issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was gonna ask how COVID has impacted the apprenticeship.
Yeah, it has, because, you know, we just don't, we're both being very careful trying to limit our exposure to, you know, the possibility of getting it, but still at the same time be available for each other. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it kind of hard, because last summer, I wouldn't have thought twice about calling Margaret on a Sunday morning and saying, hey, how about if I come down today and we do something with your loom? Mm-hmm. But it just makes it a little more difficult this time, because you really got to plan things out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also, Emily, we were planning on, I had planned on a couple of overnights.
Mm-hmm.
In the spirit of limiting exposure, I think I haven't really felt comfortable to do the overnight and, you know, stay in their home, or I've contemplated coming up and bringing my tent, which is not out of the question. But anyway, so that's how it's affected it.
For both of you, I was going to ask what role this tradition plays in your everyday life. I think it sounds like it's very immersive. For both of you, but could you each speak to that?
Go ahead, Margaret.
Sure. Well, in my everyday life, I interact with these animals daily. And as Kathy said, we have a portable fencing that we use for our sheep. And being that we're on a partially off-grid homestead and mountainside, I'm constantly strategizing about where they go next and how to prep for that. I mean, I literally have to go in with a mower and a weed eater and possibly my chainsaw and loppers to clear, you know, a line for a fence. And additionally, how to get water to them, whether we're harvesting water off a roof or hauling water in or carrying buckets. I mean, it's really, really intensive. And I've learned with, you know, with the lambs and feeding them while housing them with the ewes, it's that much more intensive. And up until recently, I was feeding twice a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this spring we had 3 bottle lambs for various reasons. And so it was incredibly intensive. They were in our house for 2 weeks.
Wow.
which is not uncommon. I grew up with my mother bringing, you know, goats, little kids and lambs into the house. So that's not a surprise to me at all. But in terms of the sheep to shawl in my everyday life, additionally, I have been really, you know, trying to figure out how best to house wool because of limited space that we have, literally, physically, for storage. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, my everyday community, COVID has really impacted that. As you well know, it's been super hard to not be spending time weekly with my friends at the Mountain Weavers Guild here in Elkins. You know, we were meeting once a month, but also weaving together weekly on Mondays. And we have a series of demonstrations that we do at community events during the summer and fall, like the Beverly Heritage Days and the Forest Festival and Augusta Heritage Festival. And I've really, really been missing the community of spending time with those ladies, because as you know, just being around each other and watching them handle their fiber and their spinning wheel or their loom and what they're setting up, it's so inspiring and also motivating. and I learned so much just by watching them. And that's been really hard and incredibly isolating. To be without them. And that's why I'm so excited about the animal husbandry part of this internship, because I don't know any people raising sheep here in Elkins. And I feel so comfortable with Kathy that, you know, as we, I've been, you know, through so much with her that it just feels natural to want to be around Kathy. And you can't learn this stuff by, you know, snippets here and there and watching YouTube videos here and there. You can learn, but what I really want more is for that person's vibe and passion and stick-to-itiveness to rub off on, because I'm learning it the way they did, which is, you know, the hard knocks and also difficult times. And when, you know, when you aspire to be like someone and learn the foundation of their craft and these traditions, it's done together in community. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to doing more of that again and figuring out how in this new normal we do it, whether we're spinning together outdoors, which I've done with my mother and my sisters, and I will be doing it here too, you know? And, you know, as far as the community events, you know, I come from a professional tradition where, you know, pop-up happenings are not uncommon in the art world anyway, and art and community events. And I think would like that to bring that to the Weavers Guild and say, you know what, we need to figure out how to do this stuff in public in a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that promotes safe face mask wearing and social distancing, but that we can still glean each other and not be holed up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I got to admit, isolating comes naturally to us here on this homestead. That was not the problem, but the prolonged isolation and disconnect, you know, from our community, you know, members of the Mountain Weavers Guild don't have computers.
Yeah.
We're not Skyping and Zooming and doing video conference. And, you know, our internet service is notoriously unreliable.
Right.
So figuring out how to be in community again is super important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our cultural community.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially I know Marian Harless is a member, and, you know, women like her who are older and live alone, that's really important to be able to gather.
Yeah.
What about you, Kathy? What do you have to add about the role of this tradition in your everyday life?
Oh my goodness. it's more than a way of life. It is life.
Mm-hmm.
You get up every morning and the first thing you need to do is go check on your animals to make sure everybody's up and moving and fine and well and eating and, you know, gaining weight or maintaining weight, that everybody seems healthy and happy. And, you know, it just life revolves around your animals. And mm-hmm. that's when we have a woofer come, they quite often ask, well, what's the routine for the day, or what's your daily routine? And I just laugh at them. Because there is no per se routine. It is the first thing you get up in the morning, you check on the animals, and the rest of the day is dependent on what you find with the animals in the morning. So, it's just, it is life. And if I'm not dealing with the animals, I'm working in the gardens, which that's the other part of Evans Knob. You know, we do 3 acres of organic vegetables that we sell at the Morgantown Farmers Market. But along with the vegetables, we also do the wool products and cow's milk soaps and all that kind of stuff. So every day is, right now as we're talking, I am working on a felted sheep. So any free time that I have, if I'm not dealing with animals or working in the gardens, I am doing something from the studio, whether it's needle felting or weaving or knitting or whatever, it's just life. That's how it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. What do you see as the impact of this apprenticeship? And that could be personally in your community, or both.
Well, I would hope that, especially with Margaret and I being in different areas, that we can inspire other people to take an interest in the fiber arts and to feel like they can express their creative ability with whatever aspect that they want to explore. That, okay, your hand-spun yarn may not look like my hand-spun yarn, but your hand-spun yarn is really cool, and I bet it would look really pretty knitted or woven into whatever. I don't want this art to die, because there are just so many incredible possibilities, and it's inspiring to watch people do different things with it that you never thought were possible. And you're like, wow, that is amazing.
Right. What about you, Kathy?
That was Kathy.
Oh, sorry. Thought I was doing a good job telling your voices apart.
It's Margaret's turn.
What I hope will be the long-term impact of this apprenticeship for me and my community, for sure, is for me personally, would like to really, I guess, further expand my knowledge bank and mm-hmm. my skills and create, come up with ways that I'm creating unique West Virginia style stuff, West Virginia style products that might be available, or you know, but moreover, I agree with Kathy on, for me, this is about continuing a tradition that far goes, you know, precedes me and continues past me. Mm-hmm. I see what I'm doing as a tribute to the handicraft of so many other people, and traditions that, you know, I'm just like a carrier of the torch of a cultural tradition for West Virginia, you know, and the West Virginia narrative. I hope that I can contribute to, you know, our sustainability of sheep to shawl and fiber arts and folk traditions like this, and that I can inspire others. One of the things we're going to do is I've asked Emily Prentice to create a zine.
Right, yes.
So in addition to a video that will be globally accessible and photo books that we'll have for our own studios. And I'd like to, you know, figure out where else to place these photos, whether it's with the Weavers Guild or with you. But we're also going to create a zine. And a zine is an artist-style booklet, very accessible. Often they're photocopied, younger generation kind of interest in a way of conveying information, mm-hmm. often not mainstream information, but something that, you know, the makers are very passionate about. And I hope the zine gets into the hands of people that I don't even know, and a younger generation that is, you know, intrigued in some way. And, you know, hopefully, you know, at the end of all of this, I've created a kind of a footprint for, you know, that shares knowledge but also inspires others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have two questions from that. What does like West Virginia style products mean to you?
You know, I've thought a lot about this because I can consider myself an outsider and probably will be considered that for my whole life here.
You're not an outsider.
Thank you. And I need to correct myself. Kathy, we first came and looked for you guys and volunteered at your farm in October 2016. Uh-huh. That was a whole year off. Okay. So what is West Virginia style? I consider myself a cultural observer. That's one of the skills I developed in my former career. And I see West Virginia a style as being a place of grit and determination and loyalty and incredible resourcefulness, a little bit of quirkiness. And yes, and incredibly unique. And there's a lot below the surface of West Virginia that we don't know, you know, as West Virginians, but also that we don't actually convey. It doesn't convey to the outside world. And the more we tell our stories and our unique story about individual perseverance and individual creativity, I think the more we learn about ourselves, but the more we can also share with the world that West Virginia is a place not just of incredible American history, but history in the making. West Virginia is not made and totally you know, complete now. It's very much a place still in the making. We're not a tourist destination, a traditional tourist destination, by any means. And we're a little rough around the edges. And when I moved here, somebody said, well, you just have to embrace the funk. And she comes from a longtime West Virginia family. And I don't think that's objectionable at all. We moved here because this place is quirky and funky and not made. And we're not rubbing elbows with tons of tourists looking for the next $20 hamburger and T-shirt. People come to West Virginia because it's beautiful and the people are unique and our cultural traditions are incredibly rich. And there's a lot of self-taughtness, you know, self-taught. Kathy's self-taught and we're all kind of scraping together knowledge together to figure things out.
Yeah.
And that is, there's a huge appeal in that.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, I've also with the zine, everyone on the apprenticeship grant panel was very excited about that. Fortunately, it's something that can reach people even during COVID. You know, a lot of other apprenticeships were planning public presentations, and you know that's fitting for these more performance arts apprenticeships, but it's cool that the zine can kind of travel and be shared even as we're social distancing. And again, I'd love to make it available online, or some of the excerpts from the zine available online, so it can reach more people too.
All right.
You've kind of talked about this, but what is your hope for the future of this this tradition, sheep husbandry to fiber arts?
Well, I'm really excited because I see huge potential as I've been getting to know the local sheep community. And I should mention, as a novice shearer, I have sheared somebody else's sheep and, of course, preemptively apologized to that person because that's a huge skill. But I really, really enjoy getting to know other people with sheep. And I foresee, besides the local wool pool that's done here, you know, a lot of people's sheep are raising meat animals, which is fantastic. And they shear these animals and ship the wool off through a pool, which is fantastic. But I would like to develop a local collective. I think there's huge potential. There seems to be, you know, a few sheep here and there, like my friend with the two sheep that I sheared. She couldn't find somebody else to do it. But I'd love to put together a local fiber flock collective in which we're creating specially blended wool that is marketed to people in the area. Because I know spinners and weavers and needle felters who would love to buy local product, local wool and roving and yarn to work with, and they can't find it and they're ordering it online. So how to get Kathy's wool products in the hands of local people here and regionally as well, to really create a sharing collective, is important, because maybe we only have a few sheep, each of us, and it takes a minimum 50 pounds to take it to even a small scale spinnery to have it processed. But my 15 pounds and someone else's 15 pounds and someone else's, it starts to add up. And now we can really create a product that we are together stronger in numbers with our fiber and our knowledge.
It's a good idea.
Well, and we're doing it with other things, whether it's with milk or meat or, commercially processed wool. So I don't see why it couldn't happen here with you know, specially blended wool for fiber artists.
Yeah, right.
And can I add one thing?
Yeah, definitely.
I am not new to farming, as I've mentioned, but it took me, you know, I lived away from home for a couple of decades, so this is all coming back to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we sent off 3 lambs to market. So as market lambs, what that means is they are going to the butcher and they become someone's next meal. And so I was like, no problem. Thought I was down with that. And, mm-hmm. and this year, after raising 10 lambs, most of which are going off to market, it shifted things for me. And I think one of the most important things with an apprenticeship like this is that one continues and allows time for themselves to really cultivate what is their niche. And I've been really thinking about what is my niche, mm-hmm. personally, as someone who's raising sheep and someone who loves to work with the fibers. And I'm not so sure that raising market animals is my niche. I love them too much. mm-hmm. And so I've really had to, you know, buck up and really channel seasoned farmers like my mom and like Kathy. As I, you know, as I figure out what do I do with these orphan lambs that in traditional circumstances would have been left to die, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do I spend time clearing, you know, the woods for these animals and doing their fencing daily and feeding them? And, you know, how do I balance that with steeling myself against the challenges of sending a cute little animal off to be processed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm learning what my niche is, right? Mm-hmm. And how to balance that with the economic reality of needing to buy hay and feed for them and
right. earn
income to at least pay for themselves. But I would like to actually not just break even.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for me, guess what? I can earn more money growing garlic and processing that into value-added products than I can raising lamb for market,
mm-hmm.
or probably also fibers. So that's something I'm feeling out now in terms of my time and energy, but also with my balancing out for my love of the animals and handling, you know, processing wool and dyeing wool and spinning. I know I'm not ever going to knit a sweater. So that's what this apprenticeship is really affording me I don't use this word lightly, the quote luxury of having a dedicated track and path to explore the various aspects of this tradition, sheep to shawl, and finding out really where my niches are personally and as an artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great. I'm glad it's been able to help you explore that.
Me too.
Kathy, what is your hope for the future of this tradition?
I don't even know how to put it into words. No, I want farmers to be able to, shepherds, I want them to be able to make a living at this. And, mm-hmm. you know, just try to figure out any way possible for it to be a profitable thing. Like Margaret said, you've got to find your niche. You've got to find, what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And by the way, Margaret, it never gets easy. You put them on the truck and you turn around and wipe the tears away and walk away. You know, even after doing this for, oh gosh, we started with our first sheep in 94. So we're coming up on 30 years of doing this. And there are still days when, you know, I put that lamb take that lamb to the processor, unload it, and just turn around and walk away because I can't allow myself to think. But I also have to face the harsh realities that, you know, I can't keep every one of them, and that, you know, we do have to make money in order to pay for their feed and to pay for any vet care that needs to be done and all the multitude of other things that have to happen. And I guess I would just like to see more people understand the value of sheep and the good things that can come from them. And you talk to a lot of farmers and nobody wants to get involved in sheep because they all think it's just money down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not worthy of being considered as a farm animal, as livestock.
Yeah. Well, do either of you have anything you'd like to add? Anything I haven't asked about?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, thank you both. You're very eloquent in describing these traditions and the impact, and I'm excited to actually meet you in person next week. And I'm glad you've been able to meet and, you know, adapt the apprenticeship under these strange circumstances. Yeah, normally we would have a showcase where we would bring apprenticeship pairs to the Humanities Council to do a demonstration. I think at this point it's on hold. I would like to still be able to do it in person, and we could do it, you know, anytime and before March 2022. So we do have some flexibility, but we also might just try to do it virtually. But I would really like to do it in person if we can. So I'll keep you posted on that as plans progress.
Did you say that would be before March 2022?
Yeah, so normally, you know, we would do it next year, early in 2021, but we actually have enough time in the grant that we could do it as late as March 2022. But, you know, we may also get to the point, and I would consult with all the apprenticeship pairs on this, that we just want to do some kind of virtual program and not put it off. So that's kind of where we are right now.
I would really encourage you to not put it off, because, man, 2022, my brain is going to be wiped clean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully there we would have a vaccine by then, you know, before then. But who knows? I mean, we would opt to do it sooner rather than later, as long as it was safe to do so. But yeah.
I could adapt to the virtually if need be.
Yeah,
we can.
Yeah.
Margaret and I are the picture of adaptability.
Yeah, I can tell.
Oh boy.
Except for, the animals that require attention daily. But yeah, okay. I mean, that's good to know. And I'll probably, at some point, I'll be in touch with the apprenticeship pairs. But we actually have one apprenticeship, the seed saving apprenticeship, that hasn't started this year at all. They're starting early next year with planting of seed, you know, planning for the planting of seeds. So they put it off entirely. Anyway, we'll figure it out, and I think we'll be able to come up with something that works for everyone. Yeah, so I will see you on Monday at 1. And Kathy, should I just use the address that you gave us in your application, or are there directions that would better guide me than Google Maps could?
Well, Google Maps is usually pretty good, but there have been times that it has led you astray. Uh-huh. So I will send you, I'll send you some directions from, I'm assuming you're coming, where are you coming from?
I'm coming from Charleston.
Okay, so you'll be coming up to 79.
Yeah.
Once you get into Morgantown, you're going to hit 68 East. Okay. And you'll take the Brewster Mills exit, and then I'll email you directions from there.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you both so much. I really love this apprenticeship, and look forward to learning more.
Sorry, I held things up for a bit. I was digging sweet potatoes.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you, Emily. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. Take care.
Care.
All right. Bye-bye,
guys. Bye.
Bye, Kathy. See you soon.
Bye.